This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, everyone. This is Basma Farhad of the People Speak Radio. Here we believe when the people speak, they make a difference. You can listen to the People Speak live on BBS Radio every Tuesday and Wednesday night at 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, or by going to our site at www.thepeoplespeakradio.net. There you can also listen to our past shows on our iPod Ready Archive section. That's www.thepeoplespeakradio.net. You can also join us via satellite on your Nokia phones. Just go to the website for details. Today we're honored to have Dr. Nabil Abuznaid, who was appointed as the Chargé d'Affaires of the Mission at the PLO office in Washington, D.C. PLO is the Palestinian Liberation Organization. And hello, Dr. Znaid.
Hello, good evening.
Dr. Znaid served as the deputy chief of the mission since 2005. He was born and raised in Hebron, Palestine. He had the pleasure of serving as the advisor to the late chairman and president of the PLO, Yasser Arafat. Prior to joining the Palestinian delegation in Washington, D.C., Dr. Abuznaid also held various teaching positions in Palestinian universities and was the director of the International Relations Department of Hebron University. During his tenure at Najah University in Nablus, he was the lead coordinator of the Palestinian University Staff Union in the occupied territories. He has organized and participated in several international conferences on Palestine. He's also the author of numerous articles, has been interviewed on media stations such as CNN and Time Magazine. And one of the most recent accomplishments is that he was a member of the Palestinian delegation peace talks held in Annapolis in November of 2007. Again, thank you for being our guest tonight. It is a pleasure having you.
Thank you.
We were just talking about Ambassador Afif Safi and his wife, Christelle. First of all, please give them my best. I had the privilege of working with them when they were here on a trip to Michigan, and it was a wonderful event that would have been nothing if Ambassador Afif Safi had not been here. Who has been selected to take charge of the PLO mission since Ambassador Safi has left, Dr. Abuznaid?
Who did decide on appointing me, or that?
So you are currently been appointed as the replacement
the Chargé d'Affaires by President Abbas.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful! Congratulations!
Thank you.
Deeply honored. Outside of the many social services that the mission provides, what other roles does the PLO mission play in Washington, D.C.?
Well, the PLO mission is like any embassy in Washington, but we don't have the recognition as an embassy. We do everything embassies do. We serve our community in the U.S., which probably we have 500,000 Palestinians, which they have some work to do with the Palestinian areas in the West Bank and Gaza. We serve them, and also we deal with Congress, we deal with the White House, national security, we work with the State Department, as well as media, international organizations, and other groups in Washington.
Well, that's wonderful. You worked with Chairman Arafat as an advisor, and I believe on part of his negotiation team?
Yes.
Many call Chairman Arafat a terrorist.
Well, you know, I'm sure George Washington was not looked different by the British, or Mandela was in jail because similar things. You know, you have to resist injustice sometimes, and the occupiers the oppressors don't see you the same way you are representing your people. They see you differently, that you are a terrorist or so on. And Chairman Arafat was seen by the Israelis and their supporters in this regard, but it was changed in recent years.
As you knew him personally, what did his life represent for the nation of Palestine?
Well, I think he unified the Palestinian cause. He founded the Palestinian Liberation Organization. Or otherwise, I don't know what we would be at this stage if he didn't do what he did in the mid-60s. He started the PLO, he started Fatah as a resistance group. We gained the respect, we gained the recognition, and on the personal level, he was so nice, charming man. If you join him for a breakfast or lunch or a dinner, he will insist to serve you and talk with you and ask you about your family. I think he's a great man on the personal level, but responsibilities he has to deal with Palestinians everywhere, with their issues, with the struggle. He had really a tough mission.
Well, I'm sure, absolutely, as far as the mission itself. And do you think that, you know, a lot of people in the end of Chairman Arafat's reign in Palestine thought that maybe he had stayed a little bit too long. Do you think that it would have been more beneficial towards the cause of the Palestinians had he stepped down before he passed away?
Well, you know, always people believe in change, and for him it was a special case. He gained really the respect and the confidence of everyone, and the case was proved in the elections in 1996 in Palestine, where it was like three elections, and really he won majority of the votes, and he was popular among Palestinians. And many times he would say, I want to leave, I will wish you will find someone else, but he sees no one can do the job he was doing.
Well, obviously, since I have to tell you, I agree that as far as the persona, the personality that he had, the power and the charisma that he had, and I think the dedication that he had, that no matter what, he was not going to give up until Palestine was free, it impressed a lot of people, even probably some of the people that didn't support him.
Yes, I'm sure many people disagreed with him and his policies, and sometimes it was not acceptable. But the Palestinians, through their struggle, went through stages. And you ask people now, they say if they did not do violence, if they did not do armed struggle, no one would listen to them. Between the 50s and the 60s, people looked to the Palestinians as a humanitarian issue. We should give them subsidies in the camps and so on. But I think the issue of the Palestinian became more recognized by the international community when they did the armed struggle. Maybe it's not the best mean, but you tell me in history, most of the people who gained their independence, they used kind of struggle against the occupier or the oppressor. So this is what he did. But also, he changed to peace. He was a Nobel Peace recipient. He really signed a peace treaty with Israel, so he was invited to the White House more than any other president at his time. He was so popular that he really made peace with the Israelis.
In fact, he did in many ways. Speaking of peace, Annapolis had held great hope for peace, but in the end, it seemed that it was no more than a giant disappointment. As all of the other peace talks have been, why and how do you think this, what seems like a failure at Annapolis, could have been avoided, Doctor?
Well, I think the problem, the Israelis did not change their attitude, did not change their appetite toward grabbing Palestinian lands. Look how much land was confiscated from the Palestinians in the West Bank after Annapolis, the building of homes on Palestinian lands. The number of the Palestinians who got killed and injured. I could give you numbers like 1,800,000 units they start building in the West Bank. We lost 400 people. We lost 16 injured. And the number is getting higher. The Israeli policy seems did not change after Annapolis. In fact, more land is confiscated. And the Palestinians, who cannot afford not to join any peace hope, it seems like they are getting frustrated with the Israeli policies of humiliation and land confiscation. So I think the Israelis have to change their policies toward the Palestinians, or otherwise they are destroying anything left from the peace process.
And what do you say to those that say that the Palestinians are not willing to negotiate, which I obviously you and I both know is not true? In fact, it's quite the opposite. So far, it's been the Israelis that have not been compliant in any kind of negotiation or dealing with international law. How do you feel about that?
Well, we don't want to negotiate for the sake of negotiations. We want results. We want to achieve independence for our people. And what we are asking, a Palestinian state in the West Bank and Gaza, which is 22% from the historical Palestine, which for me, I'm a refugee. My parents were refugees from Haifa. I'm willing to accept settlements to live in dignity and freedom in Hebron. And the Israelis could have 78%, which we accepted. But we still, they want us to negotiate on any issue we agree on, which seems it's a policy of negotiations to negotiate what we negotiated on. So at least the Palestinians accepted 22% from their own belief that Palestine is there. I think what concession they wanted us, and they want us to negotiate that, and I don't know what else we should accept. So the Israelis, it seems like the policy of expansion is not changed, and I think the Palestinians, we are doing what we have toward even stopping all violence. Really, the Israelis who are not doing anything toward that. So even the international community now blaming us. I say, why do you negotiate with them if negotiations make them grab more land? If the negotiations cannot stop the Israelis from humiliating you or moving one checkpoint, people are blaming us and we are losing credibility for negotiating too much without any results. So we don't want to keep negotiating and not achieving anything. I think we should be achieving independence by now.
Well, as an activist in my area here in Michigan, oftentimes I have said, you know, when faced with people that are on the Israeli side, their position is, what is it that you want? We've given you Gaza. What is it that you want? We've returned parts of the lands here and there and bits and pieces. And I said, I want the law to be applied. That's all I ask. International law must be the guiding principle for all the talks. The law must be applied to Israel just as it is to Palestine, just as it is to Iran, just as it is to Iraq. The law must be applied. And the illegal settlements must be dismantled. And the Palestinians this land grab cannot continue. Do you agree that it's just strictly a matter of applying the law?
Look, you mentioned Gaza. Gaza, the Israelis moved 13 settlers from around Gaza. They moved them to the West Bank, and they moved about 100,000 after that to the West Bank after they moved from Gaza. So the Israelis not leaving Gaza. Look to Gaza. They are not in control of their borders. They are not in control of their water. They are not in control of their crossing. They are not border crossing. They are not in control of their skies. Poverty in Gaza, 65%. People in Gaza, low poverty, $2 a day. The Israelis used us, used all our resources, like 40 years of terrible occupation. They built more jails than they built hospitals and schools in Gaza, and that's why we are having the problems. It is not enough for the occupier to leave when they wish. Even they did not leave us alone. I wish they left everything, and we are free in Gaza. We are not. Gaza is controlled by the Israelis. You cannot go to Gaza or come back since the day they left. It's not because of the violence when Hamas came in last year or so. It is before. They did not leave Gaza. They really regrouped around Gaza because they don't want to be in the middle of Gaza, and they moved settlers from Gaza to the West Bank, and now the people in Gaza are suffering because they used to be used as cheap labor in Israel, and that's why you have high poverty, high unemployment. What people in Gaza can do, the occupation, the terrible occupation made them suffer all these years. That's why they don't have the education, they don't have the knowledge, except they were cheap labor used in Israel, and they left them like that. What people do? They are surrounded, they have no medicine, they have no food, no electricity. And it was surprising. I met a kid from Gaza who is hosted by a family here in the States, in Maryland. I met him last week. The host family brought his grades. He is like 17 years old. He is the top in the whole school. He got the highest school, grades in the school. I looked at that kid who is 17. I thought, Gaza kids can do better. If this kid can do the best in his school, and he said, I wish I can go to medical school, but he was joking, said, oh, if I go to Gaza, if I find electricity. If people have hope, if people in Gaza have a chance, I'm sure they would go to a better life through education, but they need to be free. The Israelis did not leave them alone. So the occupation is continuing in Gaza, and the suffering is continuing. So it's unfortunate what is going on in Gaza, and people think, oh, we left Gaza. They did not leave Gaza. I wish they did.
I agree. And this is, and actually, your statements are have led me to a lot of thoughts. You talk about humiliation. You talk about poverty brought on by the Israelis offering only minimal wages for the labor that the Palestinians have offered them. And one of the combinations of that is the building of the wall. Palestinians have been used to build the wall that imprisons them. For lack of any other kind of means to keep their family alive, to feed their families. I think it's the epitome of humiliation. It's like the father that tells the son, go get me the belt so I can whip you, to provide you with your own torture. It's an amazing situation.
Yes, you have to, the wall of shame, which really was built, it's dividing Palestinians from Palestinians. If you go to Qalqilya, and we live in ghettos, you know, all the towns, they have like three or four gates controlled by the Israelis. Sometimes, if you have a girl child who's 6, 7 years old, and the gate is locked, they have to stay behind the gate. If this gate is locked, people, or even to go to their farms, they need permit from the Israelis, military permit, and most of the time they don't get it. The Israelis also isolating themselves behind that wall. The Israelis need to build bridges with the Palestinians to get them to the Arab world and to the Islamic world. Walls will not last. Walls is not the hope for peace and for people really to live with each other. I think they isolated themselves as they did to us. So the wall of shame, it should be destroyed. Even the International Court of Justice said it has to be destroyed, and the Palestinians should be compensated for the loss of their lands. And let me ask you, I think the American people are fair and just. If you don't like your neighbor, you don't go to build a fence in the middle of their yard. You put it on the border between you and your neighbor. If the Israelis came in and they built this fence on the border of 1967. We say we don't like it, we don't think it's the best way, but that's fine if that's your choice. But to go in our land and put this fence, it is not acceptable. Who is in America would accept a neighbor to put a fence in the middle of their yard? They went, and then they say, well, we did not take too much land from the Palestinians. It's like 10%. Or the Palestinians, when they say 20, they are exaggerating. But why do we take 10% of our land? So the Israelis don't, they did not change their policies toward the Palestinians. The Israelis have to change. I think we did change. We accepted Israel. We really went far. We accepted 22% of Palestine, but the Israelis given us nothing except humiliation and land confiscation. This is not the way for them to get peace. The peace they have to achieve with the Palestinians. If they don't get it now, I don't know when they will get it. If they don't get it from this Palestinian leadership who really made all concessions, who would give it to them? They should understand these wars and oppression will not give them the peace and the security they are looking for.
Well, I absolutely agree. Again, even when it comes to the wall, the International Criminal Court is designated illegal, and that's why I always say, apply the law. We have an email question from Frank in Louisiana, and his question to you, Dr. Abuznid, is, do you feel that President Carter can be instrumental in negotiations with Israel and Palestine?
I think President Carter, look to what he did. He achieved peace between Israel and Egypt. He stopped big wars between the Arabs and the Israelis. He worked hard for this peace and Camp David. I think he has good intentions and goodwill. And I think the Israelis don't like to see that. They don't like to tell them what they are doing is wrong. I think President Carter is a good, true friend of peace. He is a good friend of Israel and a very person who understands and friend to the Palestinians by saying enough is enough. You should not humiliate the Palestinians. You should not treat them like that. Look, he's the one who brought them the peace with Egypt. They cannot say one day he's a peacemaker and the next day they don't like his activities or talking to someone he does not like. I think he is a man with a great vision, and I think he is working for peace. So he's not working for the Palestinians for sure. I'm sure his motivation is peace and Israel's security as well.
Thank you. Doctor, the U.S. has shown us from time and again that it's really incapable of being an honest broker. We is now with the new presidential campaigns, our candidate, Obama, has made some very dramatic statements about his unconditional support for Israel, and especially in his interest in continued military involvement. How do the Arab organizations react in light of such powerful commitments? And that's what these are. This is not just a statement. This isn't just a campaign promise. This is an agreement and a commitment to Israel to support it. And that's what he has done and advocated publicly. How do Arab organizations react to such statements?
First of all, let me, you know, tell you something. The true friend of Israel, the person who can lead them to peace, which like I think Carter did in the 79 peace accord, the true friend is not the one he gives them more weapons to fight more wars. Wars could be deceiving. So I think the true friends of Israel, who would advise the Israelis and help them toward peace with the Palestinians, with their neighbors. Obama's statement last week, well, I cannot tell America not to love Israel. This is their business. But in the same time, they should work for justice for others. And also we tell them we are Palestinians. Instead of having a friend in the Middle East, Israel, we are offering you another hand. It is the Palestinian to have another friend in the Middle East. I'm not telling the American government or the American people to abandon their support to Israel, but they should not support the Israeli expansion and Israeli occupation. There is a difference between supporting Israel and supporting occupation and oppression against others. This country really understand, or, you know, the principles of human rights and self-determination of others. If America wants to love Israel, that's fine. But we are saying we have another friend, the Palestinians. We would like to offer you our friendship. President Obama, President hopefully Obama said, oh, Jerusalem should be united as the capital of Israel. But even President Bush and Condoleezza Rice saying East Jerusalem is occupied territory. He should leave it for the Palestinians and the Israelis to negotiate that. Why he has to take a decision before the outcome of negotiations? Why he should do that against the international community and the will of the international community, who are all the world saying, you know, the Palestinians and the Israelis, they have to negotiate the status of Jerusalem. The present government, United States government now, saying Jerusalem, even Condoleezza Rice said, Jerusalem is like any place in the West Bank. It's occupied territories. When the Israelis tried to do settlements in Jerusalem, and they said, oh, this is Jerusalem, not the West Bank, she told them, no, Jerusalem is like any place in the West Bank. So as a Palestinian, I'm saying, we don't tell you to abandon Israel. We are offering you a friend in the Middle East, the Palestinian state, and hope to see some change in the American politics toward justice to the Palestinians, toward independence, where the Palestinians can live free in their own land. This is what we are asking. We are not telling them to stop their love to Israel. It's their business, but not on our expense.
Thank you. We are speaking on the People Speak radio show with Dr. Nabil Abuzned, who is the current director of the mission of the PLO office in Washington, D.C. If you have any questions for Dr. Abuzned, please feel free to call us on our toll-free numbers, 877-489-6350. That's 877-489-6350, or toll-free in the U.S. and Canada at 888-228-4494. Visit us on our website at the www.thepeoplespeakradio.net, and feel free to support us in our efforts to continue to bring people such as Dr. Abuzned to the forum for us, for our understanding and for more enlightenment on the most critical issues in the world today. Doctor, we have a question here from Shelley from Ontario, Canada. And her question is, what influence does AIPAC hold on your mission in the U.S.?
Well, they are making our mission impossible. You know, we have, first of all, we are not recognized as a state. We don't have a full or any diplomatic recognition from the United States. We are a foreign mission, which we are really harassed by AIPAC and some other Jewish organizations who see themselves, or they don't want to see Palestinian mission in Washington, or they don't want to see any activities in support of the Palestinians. We are harassed by media. We are harassed by lawsuits. We are harassed by all means, but that is not going to stop us. And also we have many Jews are really concerned and really lobbying against AIPAC. And this is, now you see Jews who don't like AIPAC. AIPAC sound more radical than any groups in Israel. And I remember a story I read about Rabin met with them before Oslo, and they were critical of Oslo, and he told them, look, you are not supporting Israel, you are supporting Likud in Israel, you are not supporting the Israeli interest, and I think he walked out of the meeting. So they are more radical, and they are creating more problems with the U.S. and spying on the U.S. and so on. So it's they are, I think, more radical than any groups in Israel in their ideology and their attacks on the Arabs and the Palestinians in particular.
Thank you. We have another question. Mike in California asks, is it true that the only reason Hamas is on a list of U.S. terrorists because Israel demanded it?
Well, I'm sure Israel does. They don't want to see Hamas. They don't want to see, you know, we were on the list many years before Hamas. Any Palestinian groups. So look, what's the problem between Fatah and Hamas? Both sides, they would like to achieve independence or a Palestinian state. Hamas tells us, you tried 10 years or more, you did not achieve anything. Why we should follow what you did, and there is no promise that you will achieve anything. And then, you know, they prove sometimes they are right. We are not getting anything. The Israelis, who really destroying our leadership, not giving them any credibility, and that's why Hamas would be popular. The Palestinians, all of them in agreement, they want to have a Palestinian state they can call their own in the West Bank and Gaza. But if we fail to do that, other groups in Palestine, like Hamas, saying, well, we will achieve it by other means, which may be violence or resistance. And we say, no, we should give more to negotiations. We should really negotiate again. But like I said earlier, we don't want to keep negotiating, not for the sake of negotiations. We need results. I'm sure Hamas is on the terrorist list. But sometimes you talk to your enemy and to other groups to achieve peace. If you don't just talk to the people who agree with you, there is a conflict, and many Palestinians, you know, they are in Palestine either under occupation or live in refugees. You know, they have how people should recognize their oppressor first. Why the Israelis, they never had a good statement toward the Palestinians. Why it's acceptable when Israel would say yes to Jerusalem for Israel, unified Jerusalem. Why it's acceptable when they say we will not leave these settlements, or we will keep big 4-1s in the West Bank, which in a way they keep the control and the presence of their army. Why it's acceptable when they say we have nothing to do with the Palestinian refugees, when they know that when Israel was created, we got 750,000 Palestinians to live miserable life in exile now. Why when they say, the Israelis say these, it's acceptable, but if Palestinians say we don't want to recognize the occupier, you know, where are the Palestinians? I mean, Israel should declare its state where we should recognize. Is Israel recognizing its borders? I mean, as MENA, where I should recognize the borders of Israel? Does that mean I have to recognize the settlers in Hebron? Does mean I have to recognize the 67? I think Israel also need to declare their borders and to ask the Palestinians and the international community, this is our border and we expect recognition. But I hope they don't expect me to recognize the settlers in Hebron and the settlements in the West Bank.
Well, I certainly hope we never have to recognize them. You know, you brought up an interesting point, Dr. Abu Znid, when you said that it is not necessarily to the benefit of Israel for people to support them, even presidential incumbents, to support them in war. It actually, as far as I'm concerned, right now, Israel is probably one of the most dangerous places on earth to live. I think that the animosity that's growing in the Middle East, the animosity that's growing in relationship to Hezbollah and Iran and Syria, is making it even more dangerous as the days go by. So when the United States commits to unconditional military support for Israel, as far as I'm concerned, that's just making it an even more dangerous place to be. I agree with you on that, Israel definitely needs partners in peace, not partners in war. We have another question by Sarah in Missouri. Now, Sarah, we have touched on this somewhat, But there is one part of your question that I find important. Sarah asked, what kind of man was Yasser Arafat? And we've already discussed that at the beginning of the program. But the rest of her question, Dr. Abuznid, is, do you feel he was one of the great leaders of the 20th century?
Well, I think to his people, probably he is judged so. To others, maybe he's not. Like I said, George Washington, he was judged great to the American people, but to the British, he was not. And many other people in the world were not judged so. But history sometimes proved a great leader even after their time. I think Arafat did great things to the Palestinians. He had mistakes. He's not perfect. No one is perfect. He had mistakes. But I think he brought the Palestinians together. You know, after being refugees, after being living different conditions in the Arab world, he led us to the United Nations. He gave his speech. He led the Palestinians as well to peace, not just to resistance. You know, he recognized Israel. He really signed the Oslo Agreement. I think that would be great in history for a man to do for his own people.
And not to forget that he did win the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yes.
Which is an unbelievable accomplishment, given the board on the Nobel Prize. I think it was just an incredible accomplishment. Let me ask you, America is facing a general election that I think is probably more critical than an election since probably Vietnam. What do the Arab American organizations expect from the election, and how do they think that it'll impact the struggle that is happening between the Palestinians and the Israelis?
I think, you know, I rather not to get in the internal American election or domestic politics in this situation, but I think the Arab Americans or the whole Middle East and the whole international community expect fairness from the American politics. I think all of them believe in the fairness of the American people. I think the American people are just and fair people. But sometimes, unfortunately, the American foreign policy does not represent the American people believes and thinking. This country is great, and this country believed in self-determination and human rights and does not, you know, United States never seen as occupier in the Middle East like all these colonial powers. People looked with great respect to the United States. Recently, I know things changed a little bit, but really, America needs a great leadership. America deserves the best. This is what I hope the American people would choose in the next elections. Believe me, America suffered because unbalanced policies in the world, and the American people suffered. This is not what the American people are, but unfortunately, the Americans are not seen in the world as what they are and what they deserve. And it's going to take them many years to fix the damage which took place in many years, the last 10 years or so. So I hope things would be changed and a new leadership would emerge and America would gain the confidence and lead the world in peace and development.
Well, I absolutely hope so. We had a phone call, but our gentleman only wanted to leave his question. I'm sorry. I wish you had spoken to the doctor. This is from Abdu Samad. Abdu wants to know, how do the Palestinian factions plan to deal with the Israeli government when all Israel wants to do is kill the Palestinians?
Well, there is exaggeration in that. I disagree with this, that all Israelis want to kill Palestinians. I think the Israelis, they have a good appetite to our land and to get rid of us, and that's some different groups. There is the peace camp in Israel. You know, there is a growing number of Israelis don't want to serve in the army. If you go to the checkpoints in the Palestinian areas, you find Israeli peacemakers who are sitting on the checkpoints to stop any humiliation to the Palestinians. I really don't see it this way, and we would not be dragged this. I'm sure there are many Israelis against the occupation and working with us as Palestinians. The occupation should be resisted no matter who is the occupier. We don't hate people because they are Jews. We hate the occupation, and I know many Israelis are with the Palestinians to fight against occupation and the injustice. So, you know, we should not exaggerate that Israelis want to kill Palestinians and so on. There is groups who consider themselves too radical, don't believe in our existence. So, but I could see the good positive sign in the Israeli society, which many of them going toward peace and understanding with the Palestinians now.
And exactly, and I've often said this as an activist in our area, you know, many times we are accused of just hating Jews, and I thought to myself, it would probably be easy if that was really the truth, but it's not the truth, and in fact, we are in a dilemma because we do have a lot of alliances with groups within Israel that are supportive of the Palestinian cause, that abhor what their government is doing, and that work side by side with many Palestinians to solidify some kind of a peace. If you were to pick one thing, Doctor,
yes,
that you think is probably the greatest disturbance of peace between the Israelis and the Palestinians, what do you think that would be?
Well, I think one thing would be the assassination of Rabin. I think also Rabin, to us, he led the Israelis in many wars and victories against the Palestinians. But in the same time, as a great leader, he came in to believe wars will not get me anywhere as a leader of Israel. I want to get my people, the Israelis, toward peace. And I think his speech was great at the White House lawn, when he signed the Oslo Agreement, when he said, no more wars after today. Let's divide this piece of land and live in peace. Look who killed Rabin. Rabin, all his body was, you know, bullets by an Israeli radical who opposed the peace process. So I think with Rabin assassination, that was the biggest threat, in my view, to the peace process and to the Oslo declaration. So we have this, and, you know, take back before Rabin assassination, also Israeli radical Goldstein, when he went to the mosque in Hebron, when people were praying at the mosque in Hebron, and killed 29, died, and like 100 were injured. You know, there is Israeli violence. It's not just the Palestinians, like many people think. The Israelis use all form of violence, the settlers and so, against Palestinians, but even after this, we said, let's negotiate. Let's not give hope of peace, because if both sides lose hope of peace, I think disaster, not to us alone, the Palestinians and the Israelis, to the whole region and to the international community. And just I want to say one thing. When the Jews were massacred by the Nazis in Europe, they started coming to Palestine in the early immigration. If you read the Jewish writers, they talk about the hospitality of the Palestinians when the Jews came into Palestine after what happened to them by the Nazis. We don't hate people. Read some of the Jewish writers who talked about the hospitality of the Palestinians in Palestine with the early flow of immigrations. We don't hate, but we resist occupation. We will not forget, but maybe we can forgive. So we cannot, as Palestinians, give hope. We cannot give the hope of peace. So we have to be hopeful. And I think the peace will come one day.
Lorraine in New Jersey, Doctor, asks, what can Americans do to help the Palestinians?
Well, you know, sometimes I feel even don't take sides with us, even you know we are victims, so you keep your influence on the other side and to tell them this is wrong. If I believe 100 people from here go, you check them randomly and see the conflict as fact-finding mission. I am sure 90% would come sympathetic with the Palestinians, demanding ending the occupation and the suffering of the Palestinians. Even sometimes I tell people, please don't take side, even you take side to support me, because I don't want you to lose your influence with the Israelis to tell them wrong should not continue. You should not continue oppressing the Palestinians who are living under the Israeli occupation. Try to keep talking to the other side as well. So I believe in really creating channels between us and the international community and the Israelis. So we believe in really true peace, and we don't believe in propaganda or, you know, to prove the Israelis are wrong. I believe let us have peace. Let's try to have peace. Please, the Israelis, stop this humiliation and land confiscation and oppression of the Palestinians, because also this is not going to give you the security you are trying to get. This will create more violence and more reaction, because, you know, we cannot be just oppressed forever. So hopefully American people, really they support the Palestinians in talking to the Israelis to stop their policies toward the Palestinians.
Well, we have, we're going to try to get in as many of these questions as we can. They're really coming in. Mike in New York asks this question, Doctor. Does Israel have a right to a state?
Well, you know, I'm not saying they should not, because people say, well, religion should not, you know, people, well, because of religion they have a state. But the state of Israel exists, and it was recognized by United States and United Nations, and it does exist. I have no problem with the Israeli existence. I have the problem with the Palestinians not existing. This is my concern.
Touche. That's excellent. What a wonderful response. Exactly. I think we've never really looked at it in that light. It has nothing to do with the fact that they exist, or that we want them to exist, or they have the right to. They're obviously there, and they do. But we have been denied our existence in our own land, and that's a tragedy. That is the great Nakba, the catastrophe.
Yes.
Doctor, it has been a pleasure and an honor having you with us. Good luck in your mission here in the United States. We will, as a Palestinian-American in this country and an activist, I hope to always be able to support you in all of your endeavors. Thank you for being here. And tomorrow night, ladies and gentlemen, we have join me with our guest, Adam Shapiro. Adam is a Jewish American married to a Palestinian American, and we are going to be discussing his new documentary, The Chronicles of the Refugee. It's a 6-part Arab language documentary series about the global Palestinian experience. Again, thank you, Doctor, for being with us.
Thank you very much, and keep the hard work, keep working for peace. Peace in the end will come.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank
That's
you.
It, folks. You heard
Thanks
it from
for
the man.
Your audience. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Good night, everybody. It's been a pleasure. Thank you all for attending.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the sea, by the relief of fast, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is yours. This land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream water. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.